Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. General Motors has announced plans to end production at five of its North American plants, including the Chevrolet Cruze operation in Lordstown, Ohio. The move will cost more than 1,400 hourly jobs there, on top of more than 3,000 layoffs over the last 2 years after the plant downsized from three to one shift. Coming up, we're going to hear from an economist about the history of small-town industrial closings, and we'll hear from the mayor of another Ohio town and how it has weathered its own disappointment in the wake of a GM closure 8 years ago. Cleveland.com Washington correspondent Sabrina Eaton has been covering the issue this week. She joins us by phone. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having me, Ann.
Sabrina, you told me that you're outside of a press conference right now with Ohio lawmakers. What are they talking about Lordstown? What are they saying? I mean, I know you're not there,
well,
but
Tim Ryan and Marcy Kaptur are in there with a bunch of legislators from Michigan. And they are, I think the gist of it is they want to invite President Trump to visit with some of the workers who are being laid off with them and to discuss things that could be done with respect to tax and manufacturing policy to stop things like this from happening in the future. Part of what is going on here is that President Trump won a lot of these industrial areas by promising jobs, basically, while he was on the campaign trail. And, you know, this is a very big blow to these areas where these factories are located, you know, and Lordstown the Mahoning Valley is one of these politically swing areas that people look at as a barometer of presidential elections. And so that's part of why I think there's so much focus on that particular plant.
Give a sense of the scale about the impact of this closure on Lordstown. I mean, Lordstown is part of the Mahoning Valley. It's a much larger, you know, there's the greater community of Mahoning Valley, but Lordstown, a smallish city, GM, the biggest employer.
Well, I think it is. I mean, you know, I'm based in Washington, so I'm not really, you know, there on the ground in Lordstown to be able to tell you that sort of thing. But I mean, it's a huge impact for all the jobs at the plant that are being lost. Then you have, you know, the jobs at the supplier companies too. You know, that aren't going to be supplying the plant. Mm-hmm. You know, there's restaurants, you know, where the workers won't be eating out because they're not going to have money. You know, so it's all there's a big trickle down effect when a big employer like that shuts down. So, you know, I think that some of the hope here, and I'm not sure, you know, I mean, obviously I don't have any inside track at GM. I think some of the hope here is that perhaps they could retool the plant and build another type of vehicle there. In talking to, you know, some of the Congress members who have said that they've talked to Mary Barra, the head of GM, have said that she has told them that that would be too expensive.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, I think that they're holding out hope that something else will come in there and help fill the gap and, you know, keep people employed and keep the local economy humming.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the impact of a closure like the one planned in Lordstown, Ohio, by General Motors. They're going to nix 1,500 hourly jobs there on top of more than 3,000 jobs that have been lost over the last 2 years as they have downsized from three shifts to one. My guest is Sabrina Eaton. She's Washington correspondent for Cleveland.com. Sabrina, the president has obviously criticized GM's decision, and he's also threatened to cut subsidies. What do lawmakers make of threats to cut subsidies at this point?
Well, I can tell you that, you know, I think there's some questions about what he is talking about, because he makes a lot of these proclamations on Twitter, which is not really a format where you can expound at great length, since you have to keep it to basically two or three sentences. He's mentioned something about electric vehicles on there, but I believe those subsidies are things that are given to purchasers of electric vehicles. Plus, I have heard that, you know, GM is more or less maxed out on those because there's a ceiling on the number of them that they give out every year.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly what they were talking about. I've seen reports elsewhere that the Trump administration is looking at the various, you know, the divisions of government and the grants that these various divisions of government have been GM for particular things. and that, you know, that the administration has requested a list of those to see, you know, what might be done.
Politically for the president, what might this mean? I mean, we're saying this is one of five in North America. There's others around the country in Canada. You're right. I mean, that's been a big selling point for him, that he's going to bring back jobs, not lose jobs.
Well, this morning he tweeted about how this is an aberration and how, you know, jobs are coming back everywhere else. And GM is just kind of like, well, you know, when if you lose a few, sort of a thing. I mean, that wasn't his exact words. You can all check Twitter to see what it was he said. But, mm-hmm. you know, he is still trying to portray this, you know, humming economy. And obviously this shutdown at Lordstown kind of does not mesh with that. Plus, it's, as I mentioned before, it's in kind of a very key political area, you know, that presidents really want to win there pretty badly when it comes to getting reelected.
Because it's such a swing.
Because it's such a swing, and it really epitomizes, I think, in many ways, the industrial Midwest and just how, you know, it used to be a much more economically vibrant area. And then the nature of, you know, manufacturing, a lot of things shifted to other countries. And then they really felt that the blow. One of the things that folks in this particular press conference were talking about is the fact that the same day that one of the shifts was cut at the Lordstown plant, GM announced that it was going to be making Chevy Blazers in Mexico. Mm-hmm. And that really does not sit well with the workers there and the legislators who represent those areas. I mean, they feel that those jobs should be in the United States. And they also feel that tax policy and that U.S. tax policy is basically encouraging companies to go elsewhere. And there are some other legislators who say that that's not the case. Like, I've been getting some messages from Jim Renacci, who ran against Sherrod Brown for Senate. You might know him from that. He's mm-hmm. on the Ways and Means Committee. And he's also a former General Motors dealer. Part of the reason he ran for Congress in the first place some years ago was because he was one of the dealers that was just ordered to shut down when the federal government took over GM and started making changes. Hmm. So he says that that in fact the tax policy does not do that, and that they have too much losses to be taking that. I mean, he's an accountant, and he gets very into these explanations. And I'm not an accountant. I'm a word person, which is why I went into writing and not accounting, which is why he's a multimillionaire and I'm not.
Does this have the same kind of impact politically on the members of Congress from Ohio as it does on the president's fortunes in the Mahoning Valley?
Oh, I would say even more so. Mm-hmm. Well, because, you know, the members of Congress from Ohio, I mean, obviously someone running for president is, you know, seeking votes across the nation. So there's a lot of things they have to consider. Whereas someone like, say, Tim Ryan, who represents the Mahoning Valley, those are his people, and, like, they're the only ones he represents. And, you know, he's got to really look out for their interests in a big way. You know, and ditto for Marcy Kapp, who's in that press conference. Like, her area has a Jeep plant around Toledo, and so she's very focused on that. And, you know, Sherrod Brown and Rob Portman, mm-hmm. who are you know, our U.S. senators in Ohio, they're also very focused on trying to keep jobs in Ohio because, you know, they want to keep their the people that they represent happy and remain in office.
What are the expectations that the president will take them up on the offer to meet the workers right now?
Well, I didn't ask them that because I'm like, I had to leave the press conference early to talk to you. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if I were to
predict?
My prediction is that the president would probably do his own media thing because politicians like to do their own stage managing. And if you leave this to Democrats, which all of these members of Congress who are in that press conference right now mm-hmm. happen to be, you know, chances, there's a lot more of a chance of people, you know, coming up to Trump and saying something that wouldn't be good television versus if he gets to pick the people who are in there meeting with him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I do. So, well, Sabrina Eaton, I'm going to let you get back to it. Thank you so much for breaking away and talking with us today.
All right. Well, thanks for having me, Ann.
You bet. Bye-bye. Sabrina Eaton, she is Washington correspondent for Cleveland.com. We're going to continue our conversation and talk about what we know historically about the impact on smaller towns when a very big employer shuts down. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. General Motors has announced it will end production at five of its North American plants, including the Lordstown operation where Chevrolet Cruises are manufactured. That will cost the Mahoning Valley community more than 1,400 hourly jobs after more than 3,000 layoffs over the last 2 years. Some say Lordstown will never be the same without its foundational employer. Coming up, we're going to hear from the mayor of another Ohio town that suffered as well at the hands of a GM shutdown 8 years ago. Joining us now is Ohio State University economist Ned Hill. Welcome back.
Good morning, Ann.
We mentioned earlier when you first came in that it's sort of your my go-to for disasters.
This is good. As an economist, I can find the dark lining in any dark cloud.
And by phone, Vice President of UAW 1112, which represents nearly 1,500 hourly workers at the Lordstown plant, Timothy O'Hara. Welcome to the show, Timothy.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You must have had an inkling that something like this was afoot, Tim.
Well, you know, GM hasn't been marketing the Cruise for about the last year or so, which, you know, we noticed. We didn't have any reason to understand what they were doing, why they were doing it. But sales have been dropping for cars, especially GM cars, for, you know, like a year now. So, you know, we knew that we didn't have a product allocated after the Cruise was supposedly going to be done being built around 2021, 2022. So, but we didn't expect that they were going to stop production entirely.
Hmm. What is the short-term impact, Tim, in the neighborhood there?
So the short-term impact is, you know, on March 1st, they're going to stop producing the car, which will put about 1,500 people that we currently have working in the plant. You mentioned we already have 3,000 that have been laid off over the last year or so. And then we have a lot of suppliers that are, you know, they're also members of Local 1112 that supply us with seats and, you know, front ends. They'll be laid off as well. And, of course, you know, there's always the ripple effect, the trickle-down effect. You know, we estimate that there's between, for every job in the plant, there's between 3 and 7 jobs within the community that will be affected, whether it's trucking, restaurants, retail. I mean, you can go down the line, you know, so, you know, it's going to have a big effect in Mahoning Valley.
Ned Hill, 30 years ago, it was the steel plants. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the auto industry in Ohio has been hit hard over the years, more, maybe less dramatically in some ways, but GM's been shutting down plants for a long time in Ohio.
That they have, and there's two things going on. One is they're facing increasing competition from newer plants, particularly down in the southeastern part of the United States. The second thing that's been going on is productivity has been going through the roof. So they could make more cars with fewer plants and fewer workers. But what the announcement that we got on Monday, mm-hmm. I think, is just something that's dramatically different than what we've seen. Mary Barra is joined Ford, and you've got Chrysler, Fiat hinting at it. But they're hinting at that we're at peak auto sales right now.
Times are good, all things being equal, or what?
Well, no, it's also that times are good, but transportation's changing.
Okay.
So they're looking at a couple things. One, if interest rates can go up, it's an interest rate-sensitive product, even though the Fed is not going to raise interest rates because I think they're worried about a coming recession. This trade thing is starting to bite. The second thing that's going on is we're seeing among younger people, and I'm willingness to invest $30,000 in an automobile. And in the places where population are growing, they're very dense, and that's where Uber, Lyft, and other forms of transportation is there. So my conversations with leaders in the auto industry, and I don't talk to every company, you know, so we're kind of spitballing about what does this mean? And my guess is that you can pretty much 10 years from now subtract one car from every American household. So when you see GM announce three plants shutting down, one in Canada, two in the United States, plus the two tranny plants, what they're saying is we have to adjust our capacity. And GM is famous, and we knew that this was happening with Lordstown. They did it once before, of keeping one assembly plant empty to use as a pry bar when it comes to negotiating state subsidies.
Huh.
So when the crews came in at the end of the recession, the state of Ohio put $85 million in the plant. The company put in about $350 million. But the whole time, the Bowling Green, Kentucky plant was the stalking horse, saying it can go down there. And they you know, that's where the Saturn is made, and they have lots of empty space. And so what happens with Lordstown is they're announcing new products not going to be allocated in there, but they aren't going to completely shut the plant. That's going to be the next stalking horse. And then, as Tim was saying, the numbers are just absolutely dramatic. Sedan sales have just fallen apart. I don't see it as a marketing issue because Honda's got the same issue with the Civic, and we can go through all the low-end cars and the lower price sedans, and they aren't selling. And even the Accord isn't selling. The Impala is not selling. So what you're seeing is, again, another seismic shock, which is oil hit $50 a barrel this morning. And when we drove down High Street, we saw $1.99 gas.
Right, exactly.
So the crew.
So we can afford to buy a big fancy pickup truck.
Well, no, you can afford to put gas in it. You may not be able to afford to buy it.
Excuse me. Yeah, I stand corrected. Right.
And the other and part of what's going on with Lordstown is that factory was built with the notion that there was going to be a gas crisis in the future. It was going to continue. And the future was high mileage, lightweight cars. And that also was part of the negotiations that came out of the auto bailout. So Lordstown was built with one big assembly line that's not flexible. They can't make multiple platforms in that plant. And GM's saying, we don't think we want to invest in that type of assembly technology at Lordstown. And then the politics will go on up. And you know, I think that I'm going on a bit long about this, but I think this announcement actually has three very different audiences. One is to Tim and the members at the UAW saying we're going to have a tough negotiation this summer because we're at peak auto and we see this as us as a company that's got to redeploy assets towards mobility and downsize. Mm-hmm. The second was clearly at the politics saying, you cost us $1 billion in mm-hmm. extra metal cost through a tariff. And then the third is to the financial markets because as good as corporate profits were, the rate of return from the Detroit headquartered auto industries, I think the technical term is lousy.
Mm-hmm.
and they have to get the return up because what GM knows they need is a lot of capital to restructure the company.
Which worked for
mobility. For
them. The price went up.
The price went up, but that's transitory. It's a blip.
Okay, it's a blip.
But they're really looking for the next, you know, year to 2 years because they're going to need $1 billion of capital to figure out their transition to an electric vehicle.
Tim O'Hara, what sort of leverage does the UAW have at this point in regards to Lordstown or any of these closures?
Well, as was just mentioned, negotiations are scheduled to start next June
mm-hmm.
For the next contract. So as he mentioned, you know, this is normal behavior for GM. You know, we call it whipsawing within the union. They, you know, they pit plants against each other to see who will give up the most concessions or who will change certain things going on at the particular plant. So, but, I mean, for all intents and purposes, in my mind, negotiations started at 9:30 on Monday morning when they made the announcement about the plant because they pretty much laid their cards on the table.
Mm-hmm.
As far as, you know, Lordstown, Hamtramck, or the two assembly
in Detroit,
plants.
Right.
Right. Yeah, and it's actually Mary Barra's father actually worked in that plant as a skilled tradesman for, I think, 40 years. So she's very familiar with that plant as well.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking about the fallout from the announcement that GM will close five of its North American operations, including, but in particular, Lordstown in the Mahoning Valley in Ohio. You just heard from Timothy O'Hara. He's vice president of UAW 1112, which represents about 1,500 hourly workers at that plant. And also with us, Ohio State University economist Ned Hill. Questions or comments, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. And Jim in Dayton, you're on the air. Hi, Jim.
Hello.
Go ahead.
Yeah, they did a similar thing to the employees down here in the Dayton area when they transferred people around and then they shut down each of the plants. From GM had Frigidaire, and then they transferred that. That plant became the Saturn plant. Well, the S10 and then Saturn.
Mm-hmm.
And combined plant with that, where they had three products in there. They had the Pontiac and that. And my brother was with GM for years here. He had worked at Delco Moraines, and he went to Vandalia to Inland, and then they took him and transferred him to Shreveport, Louisiana to work on the Hummer, which they then sold off to China. And then he came up here to Lordstown.
He's in Lordstown. Oh, boy. What is he telling you? I mean, what's he going to do?
Well, he doesn't know right now because right now he's in the hospital.
Oh.
But this has been the usual standard operating procedure for GM to do this.
Hmm. Jim, thank you so much for that call. Tim O'Hara, it's standard operating procedure. Ned Hill, agrees with that. But it seems like it's just the future of the auto industry now. It needs to do this. It's that culture of setting down roots and staying in a community long term. It seems like, is that over?
Well,
I'm asking Tim O'Hara.
You go, Tim.
Yeah?
Yeah, it seems like it is over. I mean, back in 2009, 2010, when, we were going through the bankruptcy, we had people transfer to Lordstown from 26 different states.
Mm. Wow.
Some of them have returned to the areas they came from to work at the GM locations there, but many of them decided to stay in the Mahoning Valley because, the cost of living it isn't as high as some of the states they came from, and, they like it here. So, as he mentioned, the caller mentioned, we had people from everywhere come here. And, even now we've had 300 families that have left here within the last 6 months that transferred to other locations mm-hmm. because of the shift cuts as well as the uncertainty that existed at the time about the future of the plant. So, we've already lost 300 people out of the community already. That's taxpayers that are gone. That's people that coach baseball, that, volunteer at their church, everything. So, I mean, we've already been hit even before the announcement on Monday.
Hmm. Ned Hill, there's the trickle-down effect you mentioned, but there's just also people just leaving, and it changes the makeup and the economic prosperity of the town.
Well, especially out in the Mahoning Valley, there aren't a lot of very large employers, and the Lordstown plant probably was the largest employer in the entire valley. And the supply chain does affect the size and scope and vitality of the economy. And I think the multiplier is probably closer to 3 than to 7. But it's also going to spread. I mean, Chevy Parma is a stamping plant. And one of the cars that they supplied was the Cruze, but they've been ratcheting down. At the same time, we have to acknowledge the fact that Ohio won in part of this because the transmission plants that got closed, they made 6-speed transmissions in Baltimore and in Michigan. A lot of that work is in Toledo, where GM's made huge investments over their new 8-speed transmission. So I disagree about the fact that they don't invest for the long term. The long term's not 30 to 50 years.
What we define as long term is changing.
Exactly right, because these are a brand new plant's a $1 billion investment. And a model changeover, substantial, is $250 million to $500 million investment. So even for a company like an auto company, that's big money.
Well, why then the decision when they, however many years ago at the end of the recession, mm-hmm. when they opened the Lordstown plant, why not make it more what's the word I'm searching for?
Probably flexible.
Flexible.
Right.
Why did they back then things were changing.
The reason why, it was only 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And if you compare it to the Marysville plant that Honda has,
yeah.
Honda can run cars in batches of six. So the six cars can even have different frames. So the CR-V and the Accord can run on the same line.
Flexible.
It's flexible. And Toyota has a discipline down, so they can run cars through in batches of one. But if you think you've got a really hot product, and again, we'll see it other plants I've been in, an SUV plant, they'll try to run all the exact same car because it lowers the cost,
yeah.
lowers parts. So with Lordstown, and I think Tim will remember these days, they were running three shifts in overtime mm-hmm. because the small fuel-efficient car looked like the future. So GM made a bet, and they didn't make a bet to write off capital. They made a bet that's saying the margins on small cars and entry-level cars is very tight.
Mm-hmm.
We have to produce them as efficiently as possible, and this car looks like a winner. And so we are going to dedicate this plant just to this car. And so they made the bet, and they got 10 years out of the bet. But now they have to look and say, how do we go and recapitalize? I will tell you that a non-U.S.-owned company always makes their plants flexible because they've learned to hedge on the capital side.
Mm, yeah. Tim O'Hara, I mean, what's the protocol now? What does the local do? How do you manage this transition at this point?
So back in the late 90s, we were kind of in a similar situation.
Mm-hmm.
GM had told us that after we got done building the Chevy Cavalier, they didn't have another product allocated to the plant. So we started up a campaign called Bring It Home, which we partnered with the Regional Chamber of Commerce, which was the show to community was, behind the plant. They wanted to keep the plant open. And at that time, it worked. They brought the Chevy Cobalt in. And we started to produce that. So coincidentally, on November 19th, before this announcement was made, we started another program called Drive It Home, along with the Chamber. The difference this time is we're trying to incorporate the entire state into it because, it's not just about the Mahoning Valley's jobs. It's about manufacturing jobs in the entire state. And as Mr. Hill mentioned, we have suppliers throughout the state, Toledo, Dayton, Defiance, small towns like Holland, Waverly, Bellevue. I mean, we estimate there's like 50 companies throughout the state that supply this plant. So, they're going to be affected as well. I mean, they're going to be losing workers because obviously if they don't have a plant to supply, they're either going to lay off or close themselves. So we started this program up and, people can go to driveithomeohio.com if they want to find out more information about it. We're on Facebook and Twitter as well. So combine that with the negotiations next year, I mean, I guess that's our two hopes now that, the corporation decides to possibly, they want to invest in electric cars, autonomous vehicles. We can build anything here. We've done it for the last 52 years. At one time we ran 100 jobs an hour when we did the Chevy Vega back in the early 70s.
Right.
So,
oh, God, that name gave me a chill.
My parents bought one of those cars.
Right. I mean, we're here. We just want the opportunity to show what we can do.
And there's one other thing that I think we should all remember, that part of what the UAW did both in Chevy Stamping and Parma and in Lordstown, that made a big difference. They demonstrated that they had within the system, both those plants ended up being top rated workforces. And so the quality that came out of those plants helped turn them around. And it's interesting that, and I'll say the same thing about the Ford engine plant up in Brook Park, that when
in Michigan,
Brook Park, Ohio.
Ohio, okay.
So that's a big plant you see when you land at Hopkins Airport.
Gotcha.
That it was the UAW that maintained the culture of lean and quality when the company lost it. Now, right now, I'd say the GM still it has gotten the culture of quality back again. But I think that it's going to be a couple things about the plant. One is there's going to be three plants shut somewhere because they have to take capacity out. The second is GM's going to make that decision based on a spreadsheet. And part of that spreadsheet is going to be the public subsidy that goes into the plant. So Tim's starting the campaign for that subsidy. And let me tell you, the governor's office and Jobs Ohio are very sensitive to what's going to happen at that plant. So we put up $85 million last time. You know, hopefully we won't get up to Foxconn levels of subsidy. Foxconn, the only part of that name that rings well is the second syllable. And the other thing that we have to pay attention to, and this is a little longer term, Ohio is an engine state. So we make internal combustion engines incredibly well. With the shift towards electric vehicles, my fear is what happens to the future of those engine plants, because they're going to use electric motors, and we don't make electric motors in the United States. And the transition car is going to be some sort of flexible vehicle, part electric and part
hybrids. Yeah.
Yeah. The hybrid with an internal combustion engine. But, we've got, Ford has two big engine plants in the state. North America's largest single engine plant is in the state. I've forgotten where the engine comes from Lordstown. It may be out of Buffalo, but Tim will tell us.
That's correct.
Yeah. But that is a huge part of what goes on. And each of those engine plants have very sophisticated supply chains.
Well, Tim O'Hara, we have to say goodbye to you. I thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It was a pleasure to be on.
Tim O'Hara is vice president of UAW 1112. That's the union that represents more than 1,500 workers at the Lordstown plant, which is slated to close in March. We will continue our conversation. We're going to hear from the mayor of Ontario, Ohio, where they had a similar shutdown, lost their GM plant, and how they've recovered in the past 8 years. You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. Welcome back to All Sides. I'm your host, Ann Fisher. We're talking about the impact of the planned closure of the GM plant in Lordstown, Ohio. It's one of five slated to close in North America. 8 years ago, GM closed another Ohio plant in the Richland County community of Ontario. The story there moved to a new chapter earlier this month when ownership of the abandoned site was transferred to the city. Still with us is OSU economist Ned Hill. Joining us now is Ontario, Ohio Mayor Randy Hutchinson. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thanks for having me.
You know, I suppose the news about Lordstown sounded familiar to the folks in Ontario. How much did Ontario depend on the GM plant there at the time?
Well, it was a very big part of the community in Richland County, so it had a large effect on how everything worked around here in Richland County, especially the city of Ontario.
Like, you know, you're talking about tax revenues.
Yeah, it was our largest employer and Richland County-wide, and when they left, it was a large impact on Ontario because we live off of income tax, so that was a big blow to us.
What happened?
Well, we had to make a lot of changes. I was not mayor at the time, but the administration and council had a lot of tough decisions and pay cuts, and I meant not pay cuts, but layoffs, and just the tightening the budget. and lost our largest employer. So that's quite a shock.
How does a town sort of regroup emotionally from that? What did you Ontario create a task force, or how did it approach recovery?
Well, it was a large hit to us, housing and everything, as everybody, you know, nationwide back then. It was quite a hit for us with housing, like I said, and mm-hmm. just trying to adjust to everything and get jobs. We're a large shopping and restaurant location for about a 7 to 9 county draw, so it affected that some, but we were able to survive it, and we've been able to grow from that time.
Now, what's the significance of the fact that the ownership of the site, the GM site, has been transferred to the city? What does that mean? I mean, obviously the city owns it now, but what are the implications of that?
Well, we wanted to control our own destiny. The people that own it were supposed to provide some jobs within 5 years. That didn't happen, and so we decided to take counsel, decided to take ownership of the property, so we can control our own destiny. We can make sure something happens there. The buildings were torn down, mm-hmm. so it's just a slab. There's one building left, but we just want to clean it up and make sure we can grow from it and bring businesses back here.
Is Ned Hill, is that pretty typical? I mean, is there a typical trajectory after a town like this loses something the likes of the GM plant?
There's no typical trajectory, but there's a playbook.
Okay.
And Randy's talking about parts of it. So if you look at Worcester, Ohio, which lost its Rubbermaid plant, a million square foot plant, and Stu Lichtner and his partner in Cleveland took over the plant. They turned it into an industrial condominium and it's done quite well.
You mean for housing?
No.
Oh,
For small companies.
Okay.
In fact, I'm going up there in about 3 weeks to get a tour of the facility. I'm looking forward to it. You saw in the Maumee GM plant, and not the Maumee plant, the Moraine plant, Fuyao Glass came in. It's the largest Chinese investment in the United States and took over half that plant. Again, Lichtner took that one, and he's not a patient person. He markets the properties. He even has the Ace Playing Card plant down in Cincinnati. So the big decision the community has is, do we try to get the really big employer in, or do we follow the path that Finley took 20 years ago and go for and try to market it for a diversified set of smaller employers, so that you don't fall prey to the one big company going under.
Right.
And part of that is, it depends on what the market brings to you. And part of it also depends on how actively you market it that way.
Well, Randy Hutchinson, have you had those conversations in Ontario? Are you thinking about, do you go with more diversity, or do you look for that one big employer again?
Well, that's what we just obtained property. We just started having meetings and everything and discussing it. But, you know, having more diversity there is there's a benefit to that, in my opinion. Like, you can keep, you know, if one goes down, you still got others to rely on. Mm-hmm. But if we would not turn down a large employer. I mean, there's 267 acres.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's 267 acres, so we have a lot of opportunities there. We've had some interest already in the short time we've owned it, so I think it's gonna turn out well. It's gonna take time. It's not a quick turnaround.
How many residents did you lose? Did people move away?
Well, like everywhere, we people moved, and you know, the foreclosures and everything. But we've rebounded. The housing market has rebounded very well. We have about the same population.
Okay.
We had, you know, vacant houses there for a while, but everything seems to be filled back up, and so we didn't lose much there. I mean, countywide, I'm not sure how many, but in Ontario here, we've rebounded. The housing market's come back very nice.
And the other thing that's going to help Ontario is that the state of Ohio really doesn't have a lot of large sites available right now. The Clean Ohio
that are cleaned up and ready to go.
Right. The Clean Ohio Act disappeared, and that was used to take older sites and clean them up and spin them. And that the Kasich administration kind of put that away and went through a loan program instead. So right now there is a shortage of large industrial sites. My guess is that site probably has rail, probably has natural gas, lots of good electricity capacity. And if all that's true, that will help them with that site. Mm. But as the mayor said, the market's going to determine who really ends up being there.
We have an email from Carl who asks what happens to the plant in Lordstown. Does GM sell it or hold on to it to prevent another car company from buying it? I would think if Jeep would want to expand, Lordstown would be an ideal location. Ned Hill, are those conversations happening out there, do you think? Or
I think Mary Barra's announcement already told us what's going to happen, which they're going to hold on to the plant.
Yeah.
They didn't say they were shutting the plant. They were not allocating product to the plant. So that means that they'll be holding it in reserve.
And that didn't happen in Ontario, right, Randy Hutchinson? They said we're closing the plant and we're just shutting down and walking away.
Yeah, they went to I think through the bankruptcy and everything, it went to the Racer Trust Company, who are working with us very well right now. The revitalization program, and then it was sold to a private owner. And then since then, we didn't pay anything for the site. The private owners turned it over to us.
Huh.
So that's how that happened.
Let's see. Ken in Clintonville, you're on the air. Hi, Ken.
Good morning. I was driving a Tesla the other day on, off their lot over in Easton.
Mm-hmm.
And, man, if that isn't where the future is, I don't know what is. But, for GM to have all their eggs in one basket, I don't think that was very smart.
Yeah. You mean the hybrid basket instead of?
Oh, they didn't have anything in the hybrid. Well, they did.
Well, the Cruise is a hybrid, isn't it? Or is it the Volt?
Well, the Volt was 100% electric.
Electric, okay.
And it turns out that the car is very, very expensive. So, and the Tesla, people love it, but the price tag is not trivial. And the other challenge that we've got is the range of the electric vehicles is still limited. So that's the reason why some sort of hybrid is probably going to be the interim.
Why vehicle. You mentioned earlier, Ned Hill, correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought you said that the electric motors are not made in the U.S.
Correct.
Why?
I don't know. This is an industry I haven't looked at in great depth. I was just surprised to find out. And I think the large part was the growth in demand for motors is where machine tools are made and household appliances. And so they're going to be made where the demand is growing the fastest, and that's Asia. And also the highest quality motors are coming out of Japanese and Korean companies. So put all that together, the motors aren't here. And so that will if there's an increased demand because of electrics, well, then someone's going to have to start investing in motor capacity.
But what about and I wanted to ask this earlier, the idea that they made a bad bet on the Cruise because the price of gas has stabilized mm-hmm. pretty low.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take much to fill up a tank of gas right now. Isn't that the same issue that's going to affect the popularity of electric and hybrid cars going forward?
I agree completely. Right now, the United States exports oil. We're sitting. I mean, Ohio is essentially Saudi Arabia when it comes to natural gas. And we're producing some oil down in Belmont County, not a lot. And all that says that a complete hybrid, a complete electric bet is a little tough.
Eventually, but how do you plan for that eventuality and still live in the present with this embarrassment of riches?
Long term is now in the economic world and the manufacturing world is now 10 years.
Yeah.
So in 10 years, what we're going to see is more car is going to be smarter. There's going to be some more hybrid sold, but I think the gasoline engine is still going to beat it on price.
So, Randy Hutchinson, do you agree as you're having your conversations with leadership in Ontario and what to do with this property and how to market it and what's – do you see long-term as more like a 10-year instead of a generational sort of approach?
Yeah, it's the market's changing quite a bit. So I haven't given that much thought, but
But I guess when the community thinks about what the future means, it's not these big companies that are coming and stay, forever with the president living on the, you know, in the house on the top of the hill. It's going to be more transient.
Well, Randy, you go first.
I'm looking at the being able to adjust and the diversity and the, you know, as they say, put all your eggs in one basket. I think it's we'd like to have numerous businesses over here, and then buildings are in high demand, properties in high demand, especially the large parcel that we have. Mm-hmm. We work with the Richland Community Development Group, Team NEO, and Jobs Ohio, and then Team NEO, they're excited about having this big parcel.
Oh yeah.
I think we're at the right time now, and that's why council and myself decided to obtain the property, because I think we have a great future ahead of us here.
So, and you're asking about, you know, the length of the plant and everything else. See, companies don't invest billions of dollars and expect to run, but they reevaluate constantly. So we held a focus group up in Marion, I think it was in August. It was actually one of the best we've run on these issues. And the community was pretty clear. This is a community that lost its identity because of the power shovel company disappeared and, on and on from there. But they had lots of other companies come in. And what they said is that is affecting the town is kind of the notion of loss of local control. And there isn't a big locally owned company there that can provide kind of the corporate benefits to the community that's there. But meanwhile, you know, they've got Nucors up there. You've got Whirlpool sitting there. There's a large Japanese company that makes gas tanks for Honda sitting there. So it's a wonderfully diversified company. And it's at the outer edges of Columbus. So the housing market's picking up. But still, it's that notion of the sense of we don't have local control.
They're not from here.
They aren't from here. And the local president doesn't live on the house on the hill. It's the plant manager lives in a really nice house somewhere closer to Columbus and drives in.
Right.
We saw the exact same thing happen in Lancaster, Ohio, when the vulture capitalists tore Anchor Hawking apart.
Right, exactly. That's where I kind of got that idea from, was that a book written about that. Yeah,
and as much as I thought the opioid thing was overdone in that book, the impact on that town of the ownership and the way in which debt was used to harm the company was just totally convincing. Mm-hmm. Now Anchor Hawking's headquarters is here in Columbus. And they've got the company out of the hands of the vulture capitalists, so they're going to be there for a while. But the impact on the community means is that leadership that came from the corporate citizens of Anchor Hawking is permanently gone.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Ned Hill, Ohio State economist, thank you so much for joining us again. I appreciate your time.
Oh, you're welcome, man.
And Randy Hutchinson, just parting thoughts about what Ned just said. Are you looking for that kind of local corporate presence, or are you willing to say that may not be the case going forward?
We have Richland County has some very large manufacturers that are locally owned and controlled,
uh-huh.
And it's great to have it. I mean, I think it's very important to have that local. You know, GM was a very, very large part of our community, the growth of it over the years, and we've been able to, since 2009, diversified into some health fields. We have a new hospital.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple. And Ohio Health has invested here.
Mm-hmm.
And Vita, a local hospital, has revitalized our mall. We have a FedEx. So we've added things over the years to really, you know, help level us out. And we're coming back. And I think with this property, we can really bring something here. I'd like some local expansion. That'd be fantastic. Some great companies in Richland County.
Randy Hutchinson, thanks so much for joining us today to talk about it. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, thank you for having me on.
Randy Hutchinson, he's the mayor of Ontario, Ohio, went through a similar shutdown 9 years ago when GM shuttered its plant there. Now they have control of the property. Thanks to everybody for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.